Support for IPR comes from the Healing Room at Upstream Functional Medicine, offering medical spa services that support the body's natural ability to detoxify from environmental challenges. Learn more about the Healing Room at upstreamfm.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from IPR News. I'm Charity Nebbe. This is Banned Books Week, and the American Library Association has already documented 681 book challenges this year. This hour, we're revisiting a conversation we had in February, inspired by the book Mouse by Art Spiegelman being banned in a Tennessee school district. Later in the hour, we'll hear from a teacher librarian who'll explain how school libraries really function. We're going to start the hour by exploring the literature of the Holocaust and why reading books written about the Holocaust and by those who witnessed the atrocities is so important. Elke Heckner is a lecturer at the University of Iowa in the German department. She teaches courses on how the Holocaust is portrayed in literature and film, and she's with me now. Hello, Elke.
Hello, Charity.
Well, thank you so much for being here. And we are going to start today's conversation with a book that has been in the news lately, and that's Mouse by Art Spiegelman. It is a Pulitzer Prize-winning graphic memoir that chronicles the experiences of Spiegelman's father, a Polish Jew and Holocaust survivor. It was recently banned by a school district in Tennessee, but I don't want to dig into that controversy. I don't think that's a useful conversation to have. But let's talk about this book, because a lot of people have read it, but a lot of people haven't. Tell me about Mouse by Art Spiegelman.
Thanks, Charity. Thanks for the opportunity to be speaking about Mouse. I think Mouse is an extraordinary book that is especially suited to students in art education, but also in literature at the high school level. And beyond. Mouse is written from a second generation perspective, i.e., Art Spiegelman is the son of a Holocaust survivor, Ladig. And in this graphic novel, we see him interviewing his father. His father, you know, is featured on an exercise bike in Regal Park. We see Art Spiegelman producing an entire artistic toolbox to reimagine or to imagine for himself as the son of Ladig, the experience of his father. And this takes on different styles of artistic representation and narration. For instance, Art Spiegelman will at times imagine himself as a little mouse. Art Spiegelman himself has not lived through the Holocaust, but is basically positioning himself as part of his father's story. And as such, I think this story is really important for students who try to think about what it means for them in, let's say, the third or fourth generation to relate to an event they have not gone through. So in terms of the artistic toolbox, as I said, there are instances in Mouse in which Art Spiegelman represents himself as a mouse, literally, but also drawing on the visual photographic repertoire of the Holocaust. He will incorporate the gates of Auschwitz in his drawing. He will incorporate a drawing of a photograph by the photographer Margaret Bourke White that photographed survivors who were liberated at a different concentration camp in Buchenwald. He will also draw on personal photographs and memory of his mother. His mother, as we learn, killed herself, presumably as a result of the trauma she suffered during the Holocaust. And what we see in the book is Art Spiegelman's reaction to the loss of his mother, to the story of his father. We also see, and that's especially featured on the cover or on the back of the cover of the book, how Art Spiegelman literally will hold the mouse mask, asking basically the question what it means as the son of the second generation to represent his father's story. Now, we should also mention that in terms of this artistic representation, Spiegelman draws on early representations of the Haggadah, in which human figures were represented as animals. He also appropriates the Nazi stereotype of representing Jews as vermin. So he represents the Jewish people as mice and the Nazis as cats. And I think in terms of some of the issues that have come up in that unfortunate debate around the book, we need to understand that the book is not a documentary or a photo collection, but it is in fact artistically mediated. So when we see, for instance, let's say representations of hangings or mice or cats throwing a mouse shut on the wall, this is an artistic mediation. And when I say mediation, I mean a symbolic visual image is being used to represent a certain event, and that mediation protects children or also adults from the direct impact of trauma or being traumatized, while at the same time allowing really easy access to the general story. So I think the book somehow has been unfortunately misrepresented by folks who may have difficulty reading the artistic toolbox. And this, I'd like to make a pitch here for increasing art education, not just for students and adolescents, but also for parents and school boards. I think we could all learn from a conversation about how to interpret and read very important books. You know, this book was featured in a lesson plan in the week of the International Holocaust Remembrance Day, January 27th, the liberation of Auschwitz. And it does make a very important contribution to remembering the history. But again, it is exceedingly important to understand that this story is told from the perspective of the son of a survivor, who is basically the link for us as reader to the survivor generation. And so what we get in the story are his reactions, his responses, his struggles. And I think that especially now, since we are dealing with the pandemic, I think especially for younger readers, it would be very, very helpful to look at how Spiegelman himself is dealing with traumatic events, how he's coping with states of depression or anxiety. So I do think this book has a lot to teach us.
Well, and I think that a misunderstanding often when a book is published in this graphic format, and of course, Mouse was published in 1980 and it won the Pulitzer Prize. It's very well known and respected. But obviously, there are going to be readers encountering this for the first time. And I think sometimes when people look at something and it looks like a graphic novel, they think it's intended for small children. And that's really not the case here.
Charity, you're absolutely right. What Art Spiegelman has really done, he's taken the medium of comics, which is, you know, a very popular, democratic, popular culture medium, which allows everybody to pick up a comic, read it, and have easy access to a story. And he has basically revolutionized the medium to introduce difficult histories and traumatic histories. And Art Spiegelman has a really interesting theory. He says when we experience trauma, we actually think of it in terms of images and maybe brief words. So he feels that the medium of comics, and he would insist on his graphic novel as a comic with an X at the end, reflecting a kind of practice of deep thinking and engagement with difficult histories that lead to further conversations. So, Charity, you are absolutely right. You know, this is not a book for young children, but for adults and for students in the art education setting or in the high school setting.
Yeah, and I would be very happy for my junior high son, for example, to sit down and engage with this book. It's not one that I encountered in my schooling. I read it when I was in my 20s, and it felt like everybody else had read it in college, but I was ignorant of it. And the power of the work is really, it's transformative when you engage with it. And it was like nothing I'd ever seen before.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And I have to say, from class experience and from teaching the book myself in the college classroom, students have loved the book. And I think it is so important as a medium that really allows easy access and that at the same time raises the very important questions. How do we from the fourth or fifth generation relate to catastrophic events that we weren't part of, and how that involves a kind of process of trying to imagine or reimagine events that we have been told through images, through stories, but also, of course, for art education, what would it mean to be drawing that, to be artistically expressing traumas or other stresses during the pandemic, and how could this practice of creativity actually be therapeutic?
Well, we are going to have to take a short break. And when we come back, I want to talk more about what it means for young readers to read this kind of literature, the kind of experience that they have, the empathy that is built in addition to the understanding of history, and why this is something that you don't necessarily want to avoid with young people, how powerful it can be. We'll also talk about some of the other works of Holocaust literature that are also important to you and profound experiences for readers. With me right now is Elke Heckner. She's a lecturer in the University of Iowa German Department. She teaches courses on how the Holocaust is portrayed in literature and film. Later on in the hour, we're going to ask a librarian. We'll talk about how school libraries really work and what processes are already in place to deal with parental concerns and challenges. I'm Charity Nebbe, and you're listening to an archive edition of Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR comes from the Healing Room at Upstream Functional Medicine, offering medical spa services that support the body's natural ability to detoxify from environmental challenges. Learn more about the Healing Room at upstreamfm.com.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to an archive edition of Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we are having some conversations sparked by recent book challenges. We've heard a lot about book challenges in the news. They have sparked a lot of controversy on social media. This hour, we are trying to go beyond the headlines and talk about some of the really important issues that book challenges do bring up. In a little while, we'll find out how school libraries really work from a librarian. Right now, we are talking about literature of the Holocaust. Of course, we all know that recently, by Art Spiegelman, the Pulitzer Prize-winning graphic memoir, was banned by a school district in Tennessee. We've been talking about this incredibly powerful work of literature with Elke Heckner. She's a lecturer at the University of Iowa in the German Department. And Elke, I want to move on now, and I do recommend that anybody who hasn't read Mouse should read Mouse. And if you haven't read it in a long time, I think it's a great idea to give it another look, because it's such an incredibly powerful and unique work of literature. But This is really tough subject matter. And, you know, I'm a parent. I've had a lot of difficult conversations with my kids. I do understand the impulse of some parents to protect their children from this information, from knowing about the atrocities that were committed by the Nazis. I mean, I think it's incredibly important to learn about the Holocaust, but it's a difficult thing to introduce your child to. Tell me a little bit from your perspective about how literature can introduce children to this terrible episode in history in a really safe and useful way.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Charity. There has been a lot of research done by the United States Holocaust Museum, but also by Educator on age-appropriate materials for different age groups, starting in the age range 6 to 9, and then 9 to 12 and up. And it has been found that students in grade 6 and above have the ability to empathize with individual eyewitness accounts, and they attempt to understand the complexities of Holocaust history, but they don't really cannot really place this in a larger historical context. So I think some of the early first of all, I do think a number of states have a curriculum that seeks to deconstruct prejudice of all kinds along ethnic or religious line, and often Holocaust education in these very early age groups is part of that curriculum. I think especially when we're talking about books for children, I think books that stress the rescue aspect, or books that have uplifting endings such as the Diary of Anne Frank, although it has been terribly sanitized in terms of history, would be very useful to provide a safe space for discussions about practices of discrimination that are experienced or that have been experienced by children and adults in the context of genocide. And I do think, the safe setting of a classroom also provides the opportunity to grow intellectually and emotionally by engaging with this difficult material and thinking about it. So I'm, just very briefly going back to Art Spiegelman, one of the objections that was raised were representations of hangings that were drawn about a family. These were neighbors of Ludwig, Art Spiegelman's father, who had a store and who basically gave out food and commodities for those who needed it. And they were found out by the Nazis and then hanged on the public square. Now, this specific image, of hangings, I think, would also be a really great entry point into a discussion. There are all kinds of representations of hanging in American culture, especially, of course, the American West. So I could imagine, to have maybe really helpful dinner conversations about the context. And this conversation may be uncomfortable, but I really do think that both children and parents could really benefit from deeply engaging with this material. When it comes to older children, one of the things we educators try to do, especially in terms of understanding Holocaust prevention and the factors that led up to Holocaust prevention, is to talk about the notion of the bystander, and that most genocides, whether it's the Holocaust, the Armenian genocide, or the genocide in Rwanda, basically happened because bystanders enabled the perpetrators to do their horrific, to commit horrific atrocities. So I do think, especially with older children, it is very important to teach them that yes, we learn about the past in order to think critically about the present and the future and how to interact with people who are different from us, who have different religions and ethnicity, and how to do so in a respectful way, and how to also possibly intervene in situations when we hear perhaps, since anti-Semitism is on the rise, an anti-Semitic slur, and make very clear that this is not okay. In other words, the former ambassador to the United Nations, Samantha Power, has coined a really powerful term called the upstander, which is also being used by a number of Holocaust museums, which basically asks for smart intervention strategies, maybe speaking up, not accepting bullying, to exactly break through what we've seen as the paralysis of the bystander. So I do think students, as they learn to navigate the world and become ethical beings to do the right thing, I do think that these case studies of understanding the relevance of how we think about the past for the present and the future, I do think this is a very valuable tool. And I worry what it means to be depriving students of this educational opportunity of growth, both emotionally and intellectually.
The experience of reading a book that contains difficult subject matter, I think that the experience of diving into a book is an exercise in empathy. And it's also, I think of it kind of as an opportunity to have experiences that you will not have in your own life, but to sort of build the muscles created by having this vicarious experience. And I also think about with children, I've helped my children draw connections, not just between the books that they read specifically about the Holocaust, but I also point out to them in other works of fiction, things that were inspired by the Holocaust, like the bad guys in Star Wars, like Voldemort in Harry Potter. I mean, it feels like literature, even fictional, is an opportunity to help our children understand the world and prepare them for, because obviously these terrible things happen in our world.
Yeah, Charity, this is so brilliantly put. It sounds like you're doing all the right things as a parent. And yes, you're absolutely right. You know, if you watch Star Wars, yes, this is absolutely informed by the experience of the Holocaust. And it is exceedingly important to point that out.
Let's talk about some of the other books that you recommend. There's so much Holocaust literature. You mentioned Anne Frank, which is the Diary of Anne Frank, which is something that so many people have read and is on so many recommended reading lists and also has been challenged and banned in school districts in the past. And we're going to dig into the Diary of Anne Frank a little bit more on a later show, because the University of Iowa is spending a semester really exploring the legacy of Anne Frank. But I want to talk about some of the other titles that you have shared with me. And let's start with Survival in Auschwitz. And we don't have a lot of time to talk about each one of these books, but tell me about that book.
Survival in Auschwitz is an iconic book by Primo Levi, a survivor of the Holocaust, who was a chemist who went through Auschwitz and then chronicled his experience in Auschwitz. This is an incredibly powerful book, as he describes Auschwitz as this kind of like mad social experiment in which people will get pitted against each other for survival. And in many ways, he basically describes, it's a manual also about what he thinks, what it took to survive, and what it meant also for many who are still unnamed and unremembered to not survive, and how this horrific system of the concentration camp basically does not allow for any redemptive or happy end. And I think this is very important because as we are coming to the moment of liberation in this chapter, it is also exceedingly important to think about, you know, that a lot of our Hollywood representation always tends to end on this really happy note. But I think Primo Levi points out that, you know, the Holocaust doesn't have a redemptive ending. And while at the same time, it is very important to maybe provide this for our children, especially in younger age groups. So I would highly recommend this book.
Let's talk about Ghetto Diary.
Okay, Ghetto Diary is by Janusz Korczak, who was this absolutely amazing physician in the Warsaw Ghetto, who ran an orphanage for children who had become orphans in the Warsaw Ghetto under these really difficult circumstances. He was an advocate for children's rights. The UNESCO has basically modeled their model for children's rights after his writing. He has published children's books, and he refused to take sanctuary when he was offered by the Nazis and others to leave his children. But he actually went with them to Dobrunka, to the extermination camp. He chronicles in these diaries his thoughts, the desperation that set in, his attempt to get food for the children to keep them going, and how to instill in children, even under these horrific circumstances, a set of civic and democratic values. Children also in his orphanage had basically a kind of court where they could decide whether adults had treated them justly or not. So he is just such an amazing person, and the Ghetto Diary gives us a bit of an insight into his struggles at that time.
You've also selected another book for your list that I think more people are familiar with, and that's Night by Elie Wiesel. Why do you feel like this is such an important book to read?
Well, Elie Wiesel, in many ways, has been the survivor spokesperson for the Holocaust. This book has been consistently for the past decades on, at the top of Holocaust reading lists, especially when Oprah put it through her book club. I do think Night, you know, is a book that everybody should read, certainly starting at the high school level, to literally get an account of to literally get an eyewitness account by one of the prominent survivors. I mean, Maus is a second generation book, which also should be very clear, and Primo Levi, Survivor in Auschwitz, is a kind of like historical memoir of Primo Levi's experience in Auschwitz. And Janusz Korczak is these are diary entries. So all of these are very different genres of Holocaust literature.
You also included Still Alive, A Holocaust Girlhood Remembered by Ruth Kluger.
Yes, Ruth Kluger is an Austrian, is the child of an Austrian survivor of the Holocaust, and Ruth Kluger, who had an academic appointment in the U.S., is also writing from a second-generation perspective in terms of what does it mean, what does the legacy of, let's say, Dachau, the concentration camp by Munich, mean for us today? What does it also mean to have potentially conflicts with your parents, or in this case with her mother, in terms of how to think about the Holocaust? Is there a difference between survivor memory and second generation memory, very much along the lines of some of the issues that Art Spiegelman expresses? It's not a graphic novel. It is a memoir. I would also highly recommend that.
There's so much powerful literature about the Holocaust, and we only have about a minute left. But for me, as a reader and as a student of history, my education in the Holocaust, I have felt, has helped me understand so many other historical events as well. I mean, the event that we all lived through, the genocide in Rwanda, but also looking back at what some people refer to as the Black Holocaust, which the scourge of slavery that destroyed so many lives, the genocide committed against indigenous people in this country, the Armenian genocide. This foundation that I got as a teenager reading about the Holocaust has led to, I feel like, a much greater understanding of the world. And I'm so grateful that my parents and teachers trusted me to engage with this difficult subject matter. And I hear you saying the same thing, that teenagers need to be trusted to learn and grow.
Absolutely. And teenagers are much more resilient than we assume, especially if this material is shared with them in a safe classroom. And, you know, why would we want to deprive our students of emotional and intellectual growth to become, you know, citizens of the world and be able to speak to these difficult subject matters? It's enriching, and it's part of an essential formation of who to become as an ethical person.
And hopefully to prevent horrible things like this from happening in the future. Elka Heckner, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you so much, Charity. Thanks for the opportunity.
Elka Heckner is a lecturer at the University of Iowa in the German department. She teaches courses on how the Holocaust is portrayed in literature and film. Coming up in just a moment, we are going to pull back the curtain on school libraries. I'll talk with a junior high librarian about how books are selected for the library and also the processes that are in place when a parent expresses concern or challenges a book. That's coming up in a moment. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbe, and you're listening to an archive edition of Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR comes from the Healing Room at Upstream Functional Medicine, offering medical spa services that support the body's natural ability to detoxify from environmental challenges. Learn more about the Healing Room at upstreamfm.com.
I'm Charity Nebbe, and this is an archive edition of Talk of Iowa. Book challenges in Iowa and elsewhere have been grabbing news headlines and sparking outrage on social media in recent months. But we don't hear a great deal from the trained professionals who are responsible for selecting the books that populate our school libraries. Chelsea Sims is a teacher librarian at Southeast Junior High in Iowa City, and she recently decided it was time to pull the curtain back on what school librarians do and the laws, rules, and values they follow. She wrote an article called Iowa School Librarian: How the Book Review Process Already Works for the Iowa Starting Line website, and she is with me now. Hello, Chelsea.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
Well, thank you for being here. And in that article, you did a beautiful job laying out really the processes that you follow as a school librarian. But let's start with the basics. What do you feel the purpose is of a school library?
The school library is so many things. I think a lot of people have kind of a limited view of what a school library does, you know, just checking books in and out. But it's really so much more than that. A lot of people will talk about the school library being the heart of the school. And I really think that's a true statement. In addition to, you know, providing access to literature and teaching students how to be critical thinkers, how to do research, one of our big main focuses is supporting intellectual freedom for our students. So intellectual freedom is that idea that every single person, no matter what age they are, has the right to have access to diverse ideas and perspectives. And so that includes our young people. And the Supreme Court has ruled over and over again that the First Amendment doesn't stop applying at the schoolhouse door. And so the freedom to read and freedom to learn are very much enshrined in the Constitution and very much a focus of school libraries.
I have more experience with elementary school libraries than I do with secondary school libraries. And both my memories of being a kid in a school library and then also getting to observe school libraries when my kids were in elementary school, I saw a lot of the teacher librarians just really connecting with children, learning about them, and trying to help them find books that fed their interest. So, I mean, that seems like in elementary school, that's so much of what librarians do. They try to help kids get excited about reading.
Absolutely. It's the same in junior high and high school, maybe even, I don't know, more so with how many students tend to lose interest in reading as they get older, or maybe they have less time or whatever the reason may be. We spend a lot of time trying to match the right book to the right kid at the right time. And that takes a lot of experience. It takes a lot of expertise. It takes a lot of trial and error. But librarians are passionate about that element of our jobs, is we want to make sure that the students have what they need when they need it. And I think our programs have been built around that, around students, more so than I think a lot of people realize. They're the reason that we're here. I think that, well, students deserve a strong school library program. I think school libraries are essential to schools, but I think they're also like an essential element of a democracy, right? If we want our students to be critical thinkers, and we want them to be able to make informed decisions, we want them to be, you know, good people, empathetic people who have an understanding of the world and the relationships that they're in, then we need them to have access to all sides of the story, right? And for some students, the school library is the only access to books that they have. Maybe they live in a rural area where public libraries are, you know, a mile away or more than a mile away. Maybe they're in a home that doesn't have their own personal library. But every single student does have access to public education, and therefore they have access to a school library. And that's a responsibility that school librarians take very seriously. Every school district has policies and procedures in place to make sure that we're selecting the materials that students need and the materials that students want. And then the fun part is getting to get those books to the right kid.
And the books that you select for school libraries, as you, just to rephrase what you just said, you are choosing books specifically with your community in mind. You are bringing books into the library that are appropriate for different age groups and reading levels and experience levels, right?
Absolutely. So I can't reiterate this enough that, you know, teacher librarians are specially trained for this. Like, we go through graduate level coursework, we have master's degrees, and we have entire courses that we take on how to select materials for children, for young adults. And we have policies to support us in that, where they, you know, there's a list of criteria that we use when we're choosing our books, because, you know, we have limited budgets. We can't include every single book that maybe we would like to. So we do have to be choosy, and we have to balance things like literary value with popular interest or with how it's going to match the curriculum. And we also have to be cognizant of the very wide range of reading abilities and maturity levels and interests. Even when we're in a narrow age range, I only teach 7th and 8th graders, but my collection has to respond to everything that a 12 to 14 year old could need or want. And we have to be able to support those decisions that we make using reviews and recommendations from authoritative sources in our field. We just have to make sure that we have what our students want to read, and that they have an opportunity to get what they deserve from their school library when they maybe can't get it anywhere else.
There have been a lot of issues raised recently saying that parents need to have more accessibility to what's going on in schools. And the school library is a place, at least in this day and age of internet and computers, that if parents want to know what's in the library, it's pretty easy to find out, right?
Very. Yeah, I mean, that's like something that we push hard, is like, look how easy it is to access our library materials. Like, that's a main feature of what we do. Every school district that I know of has their catalog online, easily searchable. If you use Google the name of your school and the word library, you're likely to find a link to their catalog. I don't know of any school districts that don't have that. And we're very vocal about, you know, communicating that we want input on, you know, add, recommend books to us to add to the library. Talk to your students about what they're reading. Make those connections with them. It's a perfect opportunity to not only connect with your kid about like what's happening in the world and what they're reading and have that really exciting conversation about literature that I think is really common in elementary school, with your older students as well. There's so much to be gained both relationship-wise and like intellectually when you can talk about the contents of whatever you're reading and how that aligns with your own beliefs and your morals and your understanding of the world.
Well, and I often suggest that people read young adult literature because I'm a big fan of it, but we're living in a golden age of young adult literature, it feels like, right now. There's a lot of good stuff out there that wasn't there when we were kids. So I think there's a lot of good reading to do along with your kids as well. Now, obviously, some parents have encountered materials that their child has brought home from a school library that they do not approve of. And when a parent is upset about something that they found in a book from the school and they say, hey, this book shouldn't be in the school library, when they make a challenge, you have a process in place to deal with that. What do you do?
Yeah, so every school district is required to have certain board policies in place, and there are specific policies in the 605 series, if you're interested, for both selecting materials, inspection of materials, and then for what we would call reconsideration of materials. So if someone was concerned about a material, the process would start with a conversation with the student's teacher or the librarian or even the principal. And we would, you know, hear the concerns and see kind of what action the concerned party would like to take. Oftentimes, challenges or concerns are kind of resolved at that stage. Maybe that child will read a different book in class than what the other students are reading. Or, you know, the parent will talk to their kid and say, you know, we'd rather you not bring home books like that from the library. So as often as we can, we try to resolve it in like an individual way that doesn't impact the whole school. In the rarer cases where that is not satisfactory to the parent, we do have a formal process, which involves filling out some documentation about the concerns. And then that concern is taken to a committee that's either standing or appointed by the superintendent. That committee will then review the work, review the concerns, compare it to the school district's mission and curriculum goals, and, you know, consider all the different aspects of the material. And then they can decide if they're going to retain or remove the material.
So there are a number of people involved in that review process. It's not necessarily just you and your relationship to the book and your relationship possibly to the student. It's beyond that. It's a bigger process.
Yeah, and that's like an essential element too of the process, is that it doesn't come down to one individual's point of view or perspective being given more weight than anyone else's. So in like some cases, you'll see a school board or a principal will pull a material out of the book or out of the library, and then you'll find out that they didn't follow the proper procedures. So that actually ends up, you know, violating policy. So because the policy ensures that the committee is going to be made up of educators, community members, students. It's really about due process. It's about fairness. And it's a process that has worked for decades.
There are coordinated campaigns right now around the country. It is very clear, it's been documented, that there are coordinated campaigns to challenge books around the country. And the books that we've seen challenged in other school districts in Iowa are books that are showing up on these lists that are being challenged all over the country right now. And one of the things that we see people doing is pulling selections from these books and reading just a part, or showing, in the case of a graphic novel, just a picture. When material gets pulled out of context like that, that certainly colors the conversation. As a librarian, how do you respond to that?
Well, I firmly believe that it needs to be considered as a whole. I think the most common example of pulling things out of context to make a judgment would be the Bible. People can pull out all sorts of things out of context from that that might make it seem like it's an inappropriate book to have in a library collection. A work is more than just a couple lines or one illustration. The authors spend as much time and put as much care into their work as they do because it's important that the whole work be considered as it is and what it's intended for.
We have been talking this hour about literature of the Holocaust, and there's been a recent high-profile case, not in Iowa, where the graphic novel or graphic memoir, really, Mouse, has been challenged and removed from a school in Tennessee. There are a lot of books about difficult subjects that wind up on these lists of challenged books or books that do get removed from schools. And the Holocaust is one of the subjects that comes up. Social justice issues, shootings, or police shootings of young black people. That's The Hate U Give is getting banned in a lot of communities. And that's the core of that story. I guess I'm trying to say that so many of the books that people are trying to remove from libraries may tell stories that are the kinds of things that the students and might read them are experiencing, but they might also tell these stories that are very far from the personal experience of the student. Why do you think it's important for young people to read books that don't tell the stories that they're already familiar with, that they're already living?
Well, we set up our selections for our library to be inclusive on purpose for that exact reason. Students deserve to see themselves in books, but they definitely deserve to be able to explore the world through other people's perspectives. Like you said, that being able to experience something that is very much unlike your own is one of the only ways that you can really learn to empathize with people who are very different than you. It's very easy, even now with the extreme access we have to the internet, to be isolated in bubbles, echo chambers. And so literature is really a powerful way to break out of that and to learn more about yourself and more about the world. So Laurie Hulse Anderson, the author of Speak, has famously written in opposition to book challenges, especially for young adults. Her own novel, Speak, is another frequently challenged book. And she talks about how important it is for our young people to be able to experience these uncomfortable or, harrowing things without actually experiencing them. It is so much safer to be behind the pages of a book that you can close and move away from than to have to experience it yourself. And we don't know what experiences students have. We don't know what experiences their family members have had. And when we say that certain things shouldn't be discussed because they're uncomfortable, you could be very much invalidating someone's own life story right there in the room. It's so vital that our students have access to stories about all types of people and experiences so that we can learn from them and hopefully never experience them ourselves.
One of the responses that I've seen a few times to the book challenges that are going on right now is really just saying, how is it that anybody thinks that kids reading too much is the problem of the moment? And I have a 16-year-old who is a reader, and I have a 14-year-old who is a non-reader. So do you have any advice for parents who want their kids to read about how to break free from all of those electronic devices that they love so much and get kids excited about reading?
Well, I mean, ebooks and audiobooks are a perfectly valid way to be using your device. All students are readers. They just might not be in their high reading mode at that moment. Like during the pandemic, I went through a real reading slump, and I'm somebody who reads constantly. So I think, avoiding the language of that person's not a reader. And maybe they're just, they're not their best reading selves right now, and encouraging them to explore all the different types of reading that's out there.
Chelsea, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you so much.
Chelsea Sims is a teacher librarian at Southeast Junior High in Iowa City. We've been talking about how books are selected for school libraries and the processes in place to review challenged books. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.